Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Wednesday, everybody, and it is gorgeous out today. It's a 70-degree day on March the 9th. It's tremendous. The golf clubs are going to get dusted off here. Now, I won't be able to do that today. I've got to fly to Indianapolis tonight. But at some point before the week is out, I will find a golf course, and I will definitely find the Susquehanna Valley Country Club on May 4th, because that is the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. We've been a part of it. This will be the fifth year in a row that we've been a part of it, and we're looking forward to it. Now, get a hold of them and get your spot set now. A day like today will remind you of what it's going to be like that first week in May. It's going to be Wednesday, May 4th. So start making your reservations. Let's start filling up that field for a tremendous cause. And I just want to point that out before we get rolling with the rest of the show, because this is a day you want to go out for a walk. You want to go out for a jog, maybe play a little bit of tennis, maybe go out and throw a ball around, go play golf, something like that. It's just that beautiful out today, and it's just great to have you on board with us as you travel around with us, or you're sitting at home, or you have us on at work, whatever it may be. It's just great to have you on board. We're going to have a fun show today. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Roots 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up, we'll talk to Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, get you up to date on what's going on down there with the Eagles and also with Villanova basketball. They get the Big East tournament this week, and the Eagles have made one move after another. DeMarco Murray, Titans. Kiko Alonso, Dolphins. Byron Maxwell didn't pass the physical, we don't think. So we don't know what's going to happen there. So we're just going to sit and wait and see. So we'll talk with Matt Leon. We're going to do that in the next half hour. And 4:06 today, we're going to bring in Nikki Javala from the Denver Post on Peyton Manning's retirement and what it means. And then we're going to talk to Steve Blass, who has been a lifer with the Pittsburgh Pirates and has now been, three decades plus as the analyst on the Pirates Network, and get his feel about what's going on at Pirates Camp. Of course, we're very proud to be your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. We're going to have plenty of Phillies talk on here as time goes along, but we're just going to talk a little bit about the Pirates. Not as if the Pirates aren't on root sports around here. They are, and because they've been winning, I think they've developed a few fans along the way, so we check in with the Pirates from time to time, but we will have plenty of Phillies news to pass along to you, because the Phillies are going through really an important spring training for them, because a lot of the young players are going to form the foundation of this Philadelphia Phillies franchise over the next 3 or 4 years. They're the ones they're playing right now, and that's what's really important about this. They do have some really good prospects. I mean, they've gone from the bottom third in terms of their prospect list in Major League Baseball and vaulted themselves now up into the upper third, in fact, into the upper quarter of Major League Baseball with the number of prospects they now have in the system. That part for Philly fans should be very exciting, and we're looking forward to chronicling all of that for you over the next few months. And we'll have plenty of Philly guests on as well to touch on what they are doing. It's going to be a process for them, but I think you're starting to start to see a payoff in that process maybe by the middle of next year. But let's see what kind of fun they're going to have this year with the ball club. Looking forward to that very much. So Matt Leon, next half hour from KYW in Philadelphia. Then we're going to go to Nikki Javala, Denver Post, at the 4:00 to 4:30 half hour. Final half hour, Steve Blass, a true treasure, I think, of the Pirates organization, without question. Some fun facts for you. We're going to give you a couple of fun facts. Take a look at the NCAA basketball tournament as well, and who has the automatic bids. But here's a fun fact for you. The Golden State Warriors, it's like, oh, he's going to talk the NBA. No, I'm going to talk all sports here. This is all sports. The Warriors now own the longest home court winning streak in NBA history with 45 in a row. Okay. The last time they lost a home game was January 27, 2015. Since January 28th, Stephen Curry has hit 461 three-pointers. That's more than either Isaiah Thomas or Magic Johnson hit in their entire careers. Two Super Bowls have been played since they last lost at home. American Pharoah ended the 37-year Triple Crown drought. The Sixers have lost 36 times at home in that same span, the most of any team. And Tiger Woods has dropped to over four, has dropped 400 spots in the world golf rankings. So, and the Warriors, by the way, are also 6-0 this season in games immediately following a loss, which is, that tells you something. Now, what are the longest streaks in sports ever at home? These are home streaks. We're going to work our bottom up. Home streaks. In the NHL, longest home ice winning streak, not unbeaten streak, because the Flyers had that 35-game unbeaten streak. This is the longest home winning streak. Longest home winning streak, home ice. The Detroit Red Wings from 2011 to 2012 won 23 in a row at Joe Louis Arena. The longest NFL home field winning streak. In the Orange Bowl, the Miami Dolphins from 1971 to 74, which obviously included their 17-0 season in 1972. But they won 27 in a row in the Orange Bowl from 71 to 74. In baseball, you have to go back to the 19th century. The New York Giants from 1885 to 86 won 27 games in a row at home. And the St. Louis Browns in 1885 won 27 in a row. But you have to go back to the 19th century to get that. The NBA, the aforementioned Golden State Warriors, are now the record holders. 45 consecutive wins at home and still going. In college football, the longest home field winning streak. Once again, we go back to the Orange Bowl. The Canes of Miami won 58 in a row in the Orange Bowl from 1985 to 1994. And that streak, if I recall correctly, was snapped by the University of Washington. Washington went in there and beat them. Remember, they billed it as a big matchup between the two teams that split the national title in 91. Was it 90 or 91? It may have been, I think it was 91. And they split it, Miami and Washington. So they finally had a chance to play. In 94, Washington beat them. Of course, different players. But 58 in a row. Now, that's the number two all-time home streak. What's the number one all-time home streak? Memorial Coliseum in Lexington. The University of Kentucky basketball team from 1943 to 1955 won 129 consecutive times at home. Wow. Now, they were also on probation for a few years, too. But Adolph Rupp's team won 129 in a row at home from 1943 to 1955. So, again, home ice, the Red Wings, 23 in a row. NFL, Dolphins, 27 in a row. Baseball, Giants and Browns, 27 in a row, 45 in a row for the Warriors. Miami Hurricanes, 58 in a row at home in the Orange Bowl from 85 to 94. And Kentucky basketball, not at Rupp Arena, but at Old Memorial Coliseum on campus, won 129 games in a row from 1943 to 1955. I mentioned the Warriors have gone 6-0 this season in games immediately following a loss. So if you're wondering, what's the longest streak without back-to-back losses in NBA history? Right? The Bulls from 11-12, 54. Sixers, 82-83. The great Dr. J. Moses Malone teams. Bobby Jones, Andrew Toney and those guys. Mo Cheeks, 58 in a row. Warriors have done it now 62 consecutive times. San Antonio Spurs, 15-16. They've done it 63 consecutive times. And the great Celtic teams of 84-85, of Bird, McHale, Parrish, Dennis Johnson, Danny Age, and so forth, did it 74 consecutive times. Just a couple of fun facts for you. We got a lot going on today. Nikki Jabala from the Denver Post is going to join us in the next hour. Next half hour, Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. And then the final half hour today, Steve Blass from Bradenton, Florida. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back to the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Big Ten Tournament opens up today, and I'm here with you. That's the first time that's ever happened. It's the 19th Big Ten Tournament. I've done the opening day every day. I was the only play-by-play announcer with that distinction. Until this year. We will do the show tomorrow from Indianapolis before the game. And there's a one-hour gap between the end of the show tomorrow and then the pregame show. But I'm only two blocks away from the arena, so when I'm done, I'll just walk out the door and walk out the back, walk down to the arena and get ready to do the game with Dick Girardi and Jeff Tarman at 6 tomorrow night. 6:30 will be the tip-off. The game, by the way, is on ESPN2 tomorrow night as well, which will be Mike Tirico, Dan Dockich, and Quinn Kesnick. On the TV side, of course, Dick, Jeff, and I will have it for you on radio side and on News Radio 1070 WKOK with a 6 o'clock airtime. And 6:30 will be the tip-off when Penn State takes on Ohio State. The game's coming up today. It is Nebraska, the 11 seed, taking on Rutgers. And then it's the 12-13 game, Illinois and Illinois taking on Minnesota. Rutgers, for the most part, really played the role of being the worst team I've ever seen in the Big Ten in all in the 24 seasons I've done Big Ten basketball. The worst team I've seen. I have not seen a team that, I mean, there's Northwestern teams that had some really tough, tough years, but they were better than this team. I will say this to give Rutgers some credit where credit is due. At the end of the year, they actually played better. Corey Sanders was suspended for 4 games, but Corey Sanders is a good player. Offensively, he's a good player. Defensively, he has a lot of deficiencies. Defense is just something he's forced to do until he gets to go back on offense again. And he does a great job of getting his points, but he's got to do a little bit better job of getting other people involved. But that's part of growth and maturity. That's just something that takes time. And Jonathan Laurent on the inside, he played against Penn State. He's a good inside player. He works really hard. So they do have whomever's coaching Rutgers next year has a base to work with Sanders and Laurent. And they gave Michigan State in the first half all they could handle. Michigan State led the game 43-41 at halftime. And then in the beginning of the second half, Michigan State remembered it was Michigan State and Rutgers remembered it was Rutgers, and then they blew them out. But Rutgers did play better down the stretch, and then Rutgers blew out Minnesota. Right now, Minnesota's the worst team in the Big Ten. No getting around it because they suspended, and they kicked Carlos Morris off the team, and then they suspended their point guard, Nate Mason, and two other players for an incident involving a video. And they're down to 6 scholarship players. That's all Richard Pitino has right now. They have 6 scholarship players. So the what I expect to play out today in Indianapolis, quite simple, is this. I expect Nebraska to go out and play it out and beat Rutgers today. Probably win by 5 to 10 points. I think the gap between the two is closed that much. They'll probably win by 5 to 10 points. But between Siobhan Shields, who's really good, Andrew White, who's playing a little tired right now but still is really good, Ty Webster, whom I like a lot, senior year as well for him. Glenn Watson is playing a little tired now at point guard. They're still better and a little bit deeper than Rutgers is. They'll beat him by 5 to 10. And with Malcolm Hill leading the way, I expect Illinois to win over Minnesota today, and I think they'll win by double digits. I think they'll win 10 to 15 points, double digits. They need to get Kendrick Nunn going. Nunn did not play well Sunday in the Jordan Center against Penn State. Just seemed a bit off. I guess he got banged up a little bit early in the game. That didn't help. Maverick Morgan didn't play well either against Penn State after playing really well against Maryland. And Malcolm Hill was unbelievable. Career high 39, career equaling 13 rebounds. He had a great game, and he's the difference maker in that. That's what I expect today. I expect the 11 and 12, Nebraska and Illinois, to come out today in advance to tomorrow. And then tomorrow it'll be the 8-9 game, which will lead things off at noon, which is Michigan Northwestern. Northwestern gave Michigan all they could handle in Ann Arbor just 2 weeks ago. And Northwestern is playing really good basketball. Northwestern had played its best basketball between mid-December and early January, and then Penn State beat them. And when Penn State beat them there, then they slid downhill. Now at the end, Chris Collins' team is playing their best basketball again. And they've won 20 games for the first time in a regular season ever. I give them a lot of credit for what they've done. I think they can beat Michigan tomorrow. Penn State, by the way, will play the third game of the day. That's the 7-10 game against Ohio State. Just a couple quick notes on that game, and then we got a lot going on today. We got Matt Lee on next half hour from Philadelphia KYW, Nikki Javala, Denver Post on Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Final half hour, Steve Blass joining us from Bradenton, Florida. So we're going to go to Philadelphia, Denver, and Bradenton, Florida for the rest of the show today. Just a quick preview. Penn State played Ohio State on January 25th. Both teams are completely different than that Monday night when they played there. And let's start with Ohio State, pro and con as to where they're different. Jaquan Lyle was not playing well and was slumping when Penn State played Ohio State. And he didn't start. I think it's the only game, maybe there's two games he didn't start all year. That was one of them. And now he's back in the starting lineup again. They started A.J. Harris against Penn State that night. And they didn't start him against Penn State. Well, now Lyle's playing, and he's playing very well. Mark Loving played really well against Penn State that night. He played really well against Michigan State Sunday. Kade Bates-Diop was awesome against Penn State. Very difficult matchup. But he's not played his best basketball the last 2 weeks. So we'll see how that plays out tomorrow. Trevor Thompson playing about the same. But they don't have Jayshon Tate, who's out for the year now. And Tate, to me, has been, for the last 2 years, an impossible matchup for Penn State. Just can't get a handle on. Penn State doesn't have a player that plays like he does. They just don't. And the matchup has been very difficult. Well, he's out for the year with shoulder surgery. So Mickey Mitchell is going to start for Ohio State. And Mitchell's just one of those blood and guts, go to the floor, get a rebound, keep a possession alive guy. It's not going to be a great score unless it happens to be an offensive rebound or whatever. They're not going to run any sets for him. So he'll play awfully hard, but he's not Jashaun Tate either. So Lyle's playing better. Loving's playing better. Bates-Diop is not playing better. And Tate's out and Mitchell's starting. So Ohio State's different. Giddens is coming off the bench. Oh, by the way, Cam Williams is one of the best three-point shooters in America, 48%. They've got to get a handle on him or hope he has a slightly off day because he is a difference maker in this game tomorrow night. But Penn State's different, too. Josh Reeves did not play in that game at Ohio State. And Josh, to his credit, is playing the best basketball of his freshman season right now. Shep Garner, if you recall, got hurt in the game in the first 2 minutes. He hurt his ankle and sat out a good chunk of the first half, tried to gut it out, and then finally Patrick Chambers shut him down in the second half with about 6.5 minutes to go. And Devin Foster hurt his shoulder in the game, and he was out for several minutes in that game as well, and he kind of gutted it out. So Penn State is different than they were that night as well. So we'll see how it plays out tomorrow night at 6:30 at Bankers Life Fieldhouse between Penn State and Ohio State, because both teams are different than that game back on January 25th. Next week's a big week as well. Not only the start of the NCAA basketball tournament, but the NCAA wrestling championships get rolling at Madison Square Garden next Thursday, the 17th. And Penn State with a chance to win its fifth national championship in the last 6 years. They'll be heavily favored to do so from Madison Square Garden in New York. It's also the NFL Combine next Thursday here at Penn State. Pro Day is next Thursday here. Coming up, Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors has the cure for March sadness.
It's Ford Truck Month.
Sunbury Motors Ford has your truck. So avoid March sadness and don't miss these Truck Month deals. Choose from over 100 new F-150s with savings over 10 grand. F-150s start as low as $25,219. The Ford F-150 has been the number one selling truck 39 consecutive years.
There's one sold every 42 seconds.
Pick from over 65 new 2016 Ford. Ford Escapes and take $3,750 off. And they start from just $20,490. Get 0% financing for up to 60 months on all 2016 Escapes, Explorers, and Expeditions, and 2015 Edges and F-150s during SMC's March Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors is also the area's premier commercial truck center, stocking Super Duties like chassis cabs, crew cabs, dualies, and diesels. Avoid March sadness. Come get your truck at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It is a gorgeous day out today. It's a gorgeous day for a test drive. Just want to go over, check it out, get yourself a new car. You're not going to deal with anybody better than the great people at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. 1859, National Association of Baseball Players adopted the rule that limited the size of bats to no more than 2.5 inches in diameter. So in other words, starting in 1859, you didn't need to walk to the plate with a telephone pole. They had to register it and make sure the bat was legal. 1929, Eric Krentz became the first athlete to toss a discus over 160 feet. 1958, George Yardley of the Detroit Pistons became the first NBA player to score 2,000 points in a season. He did it in 72 games. Fun moment in 1980. It was the final game of Gordie Howe's illustrious career that spanned five decades. And it closed out with the Whalers playing the Boston Bruins. But they decided to do something very special for him on this day. Because in the second period of the game, they put out the line of Gordie Howe, his son Mark Howe on left wing, and his son Marty Howe on right wing. And you're saying, why hadn't that been done before? Well, it hadn't been done before because even though Gordie Howe came back and he played in the WHA with the Houston Aeros and then the New England / Hartford Whalers, Marty Howe is a defenseman. And so he would never, you know, they'd put the Howes maybe out there together, but never on the same line because Marty Howe was a defenseman. Mark Howe, you're saying, well, you know, Flyer fans are saying, well, Mark Howe was a defenseman too. Well, no, you what? Not when he was with Hartford. Mark Howe, when he played for the Houston Aeros and for the Whalers, was always a forward and a great scoring forward. It wasn't until he went to Philadelphia with the Flyers when they converted him to an offensive-minded defenseman. So they put out Gordie Howe, Mark Howe, and his son Marty Howe all together on the same line. Gordie Howe and his two sons on the same line together in his final game with the Whalers in 1980 against the Boston Bruins on this date. Gordie Howe, by the way, ended up with 801 goals in his career. 1984, Tim Witherspoon won a 12-round decision over Greg Page to claim the World Boxing Council Heavyweight Championship. Big Ten tournament, of course, getting underway today. It's Nebraska taking on Rutgers. The other half will have Illinois against Minnesota tomorrow. Penn State takes on Ohio State at 6:30. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening here on News Radio 1070 WKOK with the Penn State Bookstore tip-off show. We're looking forward to that tomorrow night from Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. And we will have the show for you tomorrow from Indy. So join us for the show from Indy. We'll talk about a wide variety of things. We're not going to just talk about college basketball. I do want to get in very quickly where the automatic bids stand right now in college basketball. Here are the automatic bids to this point. And then we'll get Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia on to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Eagles. The Atlantic Sun, Florida Gulf Coast won it. They're 20-13 on the year. Big South, UNC Asheville at 22-11 won it. The Colonials won by UNC Wilmington. They're 25-7. Yale, for the first time since 1962, is going to the NCAA tournament. They won the Ivy League regular season championship at 22-6. Saturday night, Brian Barnhart, the outstanding play-by-play voice for the Illini, along with Jerry Hester, who had a great career there, Ed Bond, Dick Girardi, and I, we went to the tavern here in State College for dinner. And Yale played Illinois earlier in the year, and Brian said, he said, we all looked at each other and said, wow, this team can play. They're really good. And they ended up 22-6 this year, and it's their first bid since 1962. Iona won the Metro Atlantic. They're 22-10. They beat Monmouth in the championship game up at the Times Union Center in Albany, and that was a great basketball game between the two. I really enjoyed watching that the other night. Monmouth, though, could be the rarity in a normal one-bid conference. They might still get an at-large bid because they have 13 road wins this year, and among those wins are UCLA, Notre Dame, USC. Some impressive wins on the road. Monmouth might still make it. The Missouri Valley, Wichita State was the number one seed, but it got knocked out in the semifinals. And Northern Iowa, the number four seed, goes back. They're 22-12, so they'll represent the Valley. Wichita State's in that bubble area, that gray area. The Northeast Conference was won by Fairleigh Dickinson last night. They're 18-14 on the year. The Ohio Valley Conference was won by Austin Peay. They will be a 16 seed. They're 18-17. The Southern Conference was won by Chattanooga. The Mocs are 29-5. And then Green Bay was able to win the Horizon Championship last night. They're 23-12. And the Summit was won by South Dakota State. And they advance as well. So that's where you stand on the tournament. All right, so I just want to make sure everybody understood who the automatic bids were. And Boston College lost again yesterday to Florida State. Their season mercifully over, 0-19 in the ACC after going 0-8 in football in the ACC. The first time since World War II, a Power 5 school has had no wins in conference in football and in basketball. I'm no expert, but that sounds bad. All right, let's bring in Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. Get up to date on what's going on with the Eagles. Matt, first of all, welcome back. It's great to have you with us. And, well, we're going to start with Sam Bradford here. We're going to start really, I mean, with all the moves they made with Byron Maxwell. We don't know his status right now. Kiko Alonso. And obviously the deal with DeMarco Murray going to the Titans. They freed up a lot of cap room. There's no doubt about that. But when you look at Sam Bradford, that's the biggest move they've made so far. It's a two-year deal, $36 million. $26 million is guaranteed in this two-year deal. How smart was it for Sam Bradford to get this deal at 2 years? And conversely, how smart do you think it was for the Eagles to also structure this deal the way they did?
I think it makes a lot of sense going both ways. I think the Eagles kind of cover themselves in the short term, and now it kind of gives them a window to develop a young quarterback, which I think is the goal, but probably doesn't put the pressure to have to use that number 13 pick this year on a quarterback and maybe reach for somebody. And for Bradford, he's got a chance now to, you know, spend another season in Philadelphia, granted, in another new system, something he was plagued with in St. Louis. It seems like every year he had a different offensive system when he was healthy. But gets a chance to build on the end of that season. And but he's also not locked into something where if he really blossoms and becomes the quarterback that everybody thought he could be when he was the number one overall pick a few years ago, he's still got the flexibility to cash in.
Look, quarterbacks are not exactly a dime a dozen in this league. I mean, the number of guys that are competent at playing it is fewer than the number of starting positions available. Would you say that's pretty fair?
Oh, absolutely. And this is, we've talked about this. A lot of people were adamant they didn't want Bradford back, and I would say to them, okay, that's fine. What's your answer? What are the next 8 words of that sentence? Because is it Mark Sanchez? Are you ready for 45 turnovers in a season? Is it Chase Daniel, who has been in the league for 8 years and has never started a game? Do you want to go with a rookie quarterback and go 2-14 as somebody who's probably not the 13th overall pick, but you reach for because you need the position and you struggle? You know, that was my point with everybody that, you know, I'm not saying Bradford's a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but I think given the options, the realistic options you had, I think it was an easy choice from a personnel standpoint.
I also think that also had the Eagles over a barrel, too. They're looking out there. At least he is a professional-level quarterback that can make professional-level decisions with professional-level speed running at him. To me, the quarterback had tremendous leverage in all of this.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And I think, like I said, I think it made sense from both sides. I think Bradford gets a little stability. I think he probably looks at a team this season that was just a mess last year, but if you kind of look at it on paper, yes, there are some significant deficiencies at some positions, but there's the potential that things could really stabilize this year. I think specifically you could see the defense take a quantum leap. And, you know, this is by no means a terrible situation here. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think Bradford, I don't know how in love he is with the area, but, you know, I think he had the leverage. But I also, I don't know how much interest he was going to have. I think there were a couple teams that were interested, but they may not have been the types of situations you want to go to. You're talking places like Cleveland and stuff like that.
Well, that didn't sound encouraging. yet, to me, this is the state of quarterbacks right now in the NFL. Is that Brock Osweiler signed a 3-year tender with the Broncos, but now the Texans want to talk to him. I mean, Brock Osweiler has had basically a 2-month audition. I mean, we don't really know how good he is.
Oh, no, no question about it. But you see, a lot of guys have made a lot of money in this league based on limited windows, and because of what you said, there's so much demand. I mean, how much money has Matt Flynn made as an NFL quarterback based on one game as a starter for the Green Bay Packers? I mean, he got a lucrative deal, and he's gotten follow-up deals to that, and he's been terrible everywhere. But he got everything based on one game where he threw 6 touchdown passes because people want to, you know, they want to believe, and there's a desperate need, and people are willing to take chances and believe what they want to see.
Overall, free agency coming up, what are a couple of areas you think the Eagles might target? Because free agency could be a better route than maybe the draft at this stage.
I think offensive line and maybe the offensive line, and then I might take a look at the offensive line. That would be the top three on my list. They gave Lane Johnson the big deal. I think Jason Peters will be back for one more go-around, and you still have Kelsey at center, but the guards have been woeful for last season. They were terrible, and the arrow's been pointing down at that position for a while, and you've also got to anticipate Jason Peters is coming to the end of his career. Well, I think they can get one more year out of him. Even at that point, he's not what he used to be. So I think free agency, they could really look to add to the offensive line. I think the defensive backfield, there's been talk that they might be interested in trading Byron Maxwell, specifically with Miami. They're talking with Nolan Carroll, who was with them this past season. Right. I think there's some flexibility there, but that could be a position they look at as well. But I think it starts with the offensive line. Because you also got to remember, Eagles don't have a second-round pick.
Right.
So they're probably going to have to look at some of these things where they need multiple bodies like the line in the free agency, at least at some point.
Why didn't Maxwell work out with Philadelphia?
I think anyone that's kind of watched any football could kind of see this one coming. First of all, I don't think he was as bad as people made him out to be. I think if you watched him, he had deficiencies, but he was not a disaster. He was not Nnamdi Asamoah. But he was a guy who played cornerback on a great defense in Seattle, was easily the number two guy behind an all-pro, probably future Hall of Famer in Richard Sherman, who became a free agent in the right year, where there was a limited amount of top-line defensive backs, specifically cornerback. The Eagles had a definite need, and he was able to cash in. He got torched in the first game of the season, that Monday night in Atlanta, when Julio Jones just beat him up and down the field. And honestly, the talking points were written for Byron Maxwell that game. And once you kind of, especially in this city, once the talking points are written about somebody coming in as a big money free agent, it is awfully hard to move off of that. I'm not saying he was great by any means. I think he was better as the season went on, and I think he did a better job than he probably gets credit for. Is he worth the money he's getting? Absolutely not, but I don't know many rational people that thought that coming in. I think a lot of people thought he was a reach and was put in a tough situation getting number one money when very few people that talk football, that watch football, that scout football thought he was a number one cornerback.
Probably the number 6 college basketball program in Philadelphia is Drexel. One of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet is Bruiser Flint, but today he lost his job. And, of course, you know, it didn't help that Lee ended up transferring to Louisville and so forth. But what were your thoughts? I mean, Drexel, again, they're probably number 6 on the pecking order down there, but what were your thoughts on that move?
I agree with you about – Bruiser's just a wonderful human being. He really is. I mean, just one of the best guys you'd ever want to talk to, want to meet, want to be with. I'd want my son to play basketball for Bruiser Flint. That's probably one of the higher compliments I can give him. But they really struggled this year. They've had a lot of injury problems. It's kind of uncanny the last 2-3 years. They've lost big-time players for significant, if not the entire season, to serious injuries. And, you know, a place like Drexel, like the CAA, you don't have 6, 7, 8, 9 players where if you lose one or two guys, you've got some other kids that were, you know, high school All-Americans and all that are just waiting for a spot. If you lose one or two key pieces, it is really difficult to overcome. And they've done that, and they really bottomed out this year. They were 6-25. They did win a game in the conference tournament, but he'd been there 15 years, and I think the struggle figured into it. It also was probably one of those situations where that you get the record and the fact that he's been there 15 years. It might have just been time for a change, but I'm sure Bruiser will land on his feet. But he is an A-plus human being and a really good coach.
Yeah, he's come up here many times for Coaches versus Cancer, and I've had a chance to talk to him. You're not going to find a nicer guy in the profession than Bruiser Flint. Villanova, of course, has the Big East tournament coming up. And did the Xavier loss send them just a mental message on mental preparation for this time of the year?
It might have been a nice, I don't want to say nice, but no coach wants to lose a game like that and
Nobody
lose the number
does.
One ranking. But it might have been a good time for kind of a self-diagnostic. They didn't do a lot right that game. I think we talked about this. They didn't do a lot right that game. They were on the road in a revenge game against a Xavier team that played lights out, and they still only lost by 7. So, you know, it's not like they got blasted by 40 or something like that. But they played well since then. They finished off. They'll be the top seed in the Big East tournament. And, I mean, I don't see really a scenario where they're not a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Maybe if they lose their first game badly, you know, to someone they shouldn't. I don't see that happening. But, you know, I think they're in position, and this is a big tournament for the Wildcats. They've struggled in March the last couple of years when it's come to the NCAA tournament, really since they went to the Final Four there in 2009. So they're kind of overdue for a run. And, I mean, when they're on, they are fun to watch. But if they're struggling from the perimeter, you know, that's where you can see them get a little off kilter. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much. And enjoy your cut from your negotiations for Sam Bradford.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right, Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. The Eagles have certainly dumped a lot of salaries. And I think not only that, they've dumped names that just weren't helping them. Just weren't helping them. Now, we'll find out what the deal is with Maxwell when it comes to his physical with the Dolphins. But look, Matt, they signed Maxwell, big contract. You're the number two guy out in Seattle. They're not attacking Richard Sherman. He did okay in Seattle. But, you know, when you got Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas having your back at safety, that makes a big difference. And they just dumped that salary, and I completely agree with it. Kiko Alonso never agreed with that deal, ever. Never agreed with trading LeSean McCoy for Kiko Alonso. I sat back and thought, this is one of the worst deals I've ever seen a team make. Seriously. I mean, you're talking about a franchise running back. They don't grow on trees, especially in this era of the NFL. And to do that, I just made no sense whatsoever. It may have been personality-driven, whatever, but you know what? Alonso, when healthy, that's the problem. How many days was he healthy? Not many. And again, when they made the trade, you sat back and went, you're kidding me. They made that deal? Seriously? To me, that deal was the start of the end for Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. That's just my opinion. And then DeMarco Murray. Oh, we're going to sign Murray and replace him. He doesn't fit what they do. Look at the style of offense Dallas plays and the style of offense the Eagles were playing. It just didn't make any sense. And, you know, he wants out. The whole thing, fine, let him go. He wants out. And they did. They got rid of him, sent him to Tennessee. So I think management-wise, they have dumped salaries, opened up cap space. Now, they're going to have to make a few moves here in free agency to shore the football team up. I mean, there's no question about that. And then we'll see how the draft plays out for Philadelphia. But all three guys leaving, all three, in my opinion, the right moves made by Philadelphia. I think they're getting addition by subtraction by what they did. Hey, by the way, when I opened up this segment, I mentioned the teams that have made the NCAA tournament with automatic bids. I didn't mention Gonzaga, which, by the way, won the West Coast Conference again. They were not going to get in the tournament if they had not won the conference championship. They just don't have the guard play this year that they used to have. I mean, that happens. Everything goes in cycles.
But they beat St. Mary's, which might still get in with an at-large bid, the number one seed. But here's a fun fact for you. The only reason I mention it is a fun fact. Mark Few, the coach at Gonzaga, his son is 16 years old. And he has never, in his lifetime, not seen his father coach in the NCAA tournament. How about that one? His son is 16 years old. And Gonzaga's been in the tournament all 16 years of his life. Just a fun fact. Well, Peyton Manning, for the first time in 18 years, won't be playing in the NFL next season because he retired on Monday. Nikki Javala, who's been a frequent guest of ours from the Denver Post, has been great to talk with over the last couple of months, is going to join us in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.